Hello again, folks. It's Andy from The Rating Room, taking another trip down memory lane as The Rating Room presents The Wrestling Room.
The Rating Room.
Now, in this very special edition, we're going to be looking at some past matches that have taken place in the continent of Europe. As we're recording this, it's the end of April. You'll probably be listening to this around the 1st of May. Well, this Saturday, WWE presents its very first premium live event in Paris, France. Now, they have been to the UK in the past. They have done some TV in Germany and Italy, and we'll get onto some of that as we go along. But this is the first time that a premium live event has taken place from continental Europe. So I thought, in honour of that, we'd go back into the archives and look at some classic and maybe not so classic wrestling matches that have taken place in Europe over the years. Now, I must admit, I don't have full notes in front of me, so we're going to be winging this a little bit, and I must give a shout out to the WWE Network because they seem to have the same idea as me, because they've put like a best of European matches compilation together on the network. So I've stolen a few of the matches from there, but a few I already had in mind and watched separately from this anyway. The first match on today's show is from Paris, France in 1988. Now, this was an event that took place in October of 88, but it was actually broadcast in November as Primetime Wrestling. Now, on this card, on this particular night, it was main evented by the WWE Champion Randy Savage, taking on Akeem. There's some other matches as well, including Andre the Giant, local hero, I guess. He took on the Junkyard Dog. And in a title match for the Women's Championship, Rockin' Robin became the new champion by defeating Sensational Sherry. There's other matches on the card as well, but the match I'm going to talk about today is for the Tag Team Championships as Demolition, Axe and Smash, take on the team of Davey Boy Smith and the Dynamite Kid, the British Bulldogs. Now, to start with, I must admit the setup is quite strange here. There's kind of like a glass tunnel as the entranceway, which looks very, very odd. And there are ring girls following behind with the kind of the name boards, like on placards. You know, like you get in boxing where they have like round one, round two, etc. Well, these are walking down the aisle behind the wrestlers with the names of the wrestlers on, which are quite an interesting touch and not something I've seen, I don't think I've seen before or since, actually. But anyway, as we get to the match itself proper, it's Smash and Davey Boy start things off. Bit of back and forth, pretty basic stuff at this stage. Behind the referee's back, Dynamite gets in and takes the place of Davey Boy. Got like an armbar on the opponent, and the crowd are loving this because it's, you know, it's a bit of tomfoolery by the baby faces, but Axe is not particularly happy because they're, you know, they're breaking the rules. And then a few minutes later, referee's back is turned again and they swap back and Davey's back in the ring. Ref doesn't see it either time. Crowd kind of almost like vouches for them in a way. They kind of say, yeah, there was a tag, and you know, it's a funny little spot to start over. But once Axe gets in, he's not happy about this and he takes over. But very soon Bulldogs are back in control and they're working over an arm. This pattern of not tagging continues. Now, it started off quite humorous because they're doing it behind the referee's back, but throughout the match they just don't use the rules and the referee doesn't enforce them. And it really takes away from the match, actually, that they're just kind of stepping in and out as they choose. And that's both teams, not just the Bulldogs at this stage. We see Davey Boy hitting a second rope forearm to Smash, which looks pretty impressive. Demolition take over then, and they start to work Davey's left arm. They've got arm bars and nerve holds on the go. A lot of in and out, a lot of basic offense. Nothing really too high-flying or athletic at this stage. They're just kind of, you know, working over a body part, treating it like an athletic contest, but it is starting to drag a little bit. And another thing that I found really distracting, actually, was the commentary. Now, as I mentioned, this was taped in October of 88, but it was aired in November of 88, and I think they've commentated closer, or even maybe even live, at the time of air date, because there's a lot of talk about the US election going on, which really takes away from what's happening in the match. And Bobby Heenan seems very distracted as well, and not really calling the action. And at one point, he even says that he predicts that the team wearing knee pads will win, even though both teams are wearing knee pads. So he's trying to just be funny and not really call the action. Then on the version that I watched on the WWE Network, the action stops and they go for what I assumed would have been a commercial break at the time. And as it comes back from the break, we're just in time to see a hot tag to Dynamite. In he comes with a house on fire. You know, he's hitting, I think it's a couple of body slams and a couple of clothesline, but Demolition soon take back in control with a cheap shot. And then we're back to this kind of arm bars and nerve holds pattern with Dynamite this time. Few flurries of offense here and there. Dynamite finally hits a clothesline on Axe and then a big boot to Smash. But then he's driven into the post and suplexed back into the ring. Now, the note I wrote at this stage is this is a really long match. The pace is slow. There's these bursts of offense, but it's really not doing it. The crowd seems somewhat into it, but it's not aged well. It's a very, very long match, and the pace is not really helping with this. And they continue in this idea of not tagging. It's, you know, it's a tag team match. The rules are very clear, and the referee's not enforcing them. So you can't really suspend disbelief when they're just letting the wrestlers do whatever it is they want to do. Now, Dynamite is still in trouble. You know, Demolition are using bear hugs. They use a Boston Crab. And then Davey Boy finally tags in. And you think, here we go now, it's on. Crowd go absolutely wild for the hot tag to Davey, by the way. Hits a dropkick, body slams to both, hits a clothesline. Only a two count, though. And then, bizarrely, Dynamite gets back into the ring. Davey Boy's on the outside fighting with Axe, I believe it is. And you hear a pinfall happen in the ring. 1, 2, 3. And Demolition have won and retained their titles. But the camera completely missed it. So I can't even really describe what happened in the finish. And I didn't see a replay. Very, very disappointing stuff. As for the all-important rating for this one, I've gone with a 4 out of 10. It was a long, long match. It must have been 20, 25 minutes at least. And it didn't need to be. They could have been in and out in 10 or 15 at max. 10 or 15 at most. So this was a little bit disappointing. 4 out of 10. But two of the more well-known and established tag teams of the era. Two of the greatest teams of all time, you could arguably say. But for some reason, in this particular match, things just didn't click. I'm sure they had better matches on other shows. But for me, this one was a 4 out of 10. The Rain Room. Now, this next match, I'm going to go to 1993. And we're in Barcelona, Spain. And again, we've got a tag team title match. As the champions, Money Incorporated, the team of Ted DiBiase and Erwin R. Scheister, take on the Steiner brothers, Rick and Scott. Now, Money Inc. enter the ring first, and IRS grabs the microphone, and he accuses Barcelona of being tax cheats. Nice little way to get the crowd riled up. However, I must admit, and this is one of the first notes that I wrote, it's either the sound of the arena or the crowd themselves seems really, really quiet. It's a very odd atmosphere. And also the ring sounds really hard and really hollow. So when the referee's slapping the mat or the wrestlers are taking bumps, the sound is just really odd. Just, I don't know, it kind of put me off a little bit. But in terms of the match itself, Rick Steiner and Ted DiBiase start things off. Rick hits a belly-to-belly suplex pretty quickly. Quick tags between Rick and Scott. Work on the arm of Ted. And I mentioned the note about the crowd earlier. At this point, Jim Ross, who was on the commentary, makes reference as well. Because he said, Sheffield was bonkers, but Barcelona, it's like watching tennis. It's not really what you want to hear, and I'm not sure you should reference it. And then a really, really bizarre thing, and again, this is called out on commentary. The cameraman shoots the crowd, and you can see it's a pretty light. It's not a lively crowd, that's the wrong word. What am I trying to say here? It's a big crowd, is what I'm trying to say. I'm getting my words confused, excuse me. So it's a big crowd. Obviously, the cameraman wants to show that this is a packed arena. But then he keeps showing that it's a packed arena. And the action continues in the ring. And even the commentators call out, it's like, what's going on in the ring? Like, let's get back to the match. I didn't time it, but if it was less than a minute, I would be surprised, where it's just looking at the crowd. Bobby Heenan has a couple of quite funny quotes. I may butcher these slightly, but this is what some of the things he wrote down. He says, this is the worst cameraman I've ever seen. I'm looking at the backs of the heads of the Ramon family and the Lopez family. And then he says the Lopez family are eating rice and beans while the match finishes. I think Randy Savage says you should probably apologise for that last comment. But I found it quite amusing. But yeah, the cameraman was just looking at the crowd for ages and ages. But eventually we do get back to the match and we've got Scott and IRS in there. And DiBiase trips Scott behind the referee's back, so IRS take advantage. Ted rams Scott into the steps and into the barricade. And they start to take control. Quick tags. A few double team moves. But Scott eventually fights back. Tags in his brother Rick. Steiner lines. Body slams all round. And then Scott is back in. Signals for the Frankensteiner. Throws DiBiase into the ropes. Hits the Frankensteiner. One. Two. But he doesn't get the three. Because just as the referee's about to count three, IRS is in with one of the tag team belts, hits Scott on the back of the head, instant disqualification. The Steiners win the match, but they don't win the titles because titles don't change hand on a disqualification, so they've been royally screwed right at the last minute there. This was a pretty decent 10-minute or so match that it was. Screwy finish, you know, I think the crowd were thinking maybe we're going to get new tag team champions here, but just at the last minute that faint hope was taken away. It's pretty basic, you know, it's two very good tag teams doing decent moves, but they don't really get into a high gear. So for that reason, I'm giving this one a 5 out of 10. That's worth noting as well. I probably should have called this out at the start, but this show in Barcelona, Spain, is one of 21 shows across Europe that they did in 17 days. There were shows in the UK, in France, Spain, Germany, Italy, Belgium, and Ireland. And some of the other matches on this card, this particular night, included Undertaker versus Yokozuna, Tatanka versus Papa Shango, and Bret Hart versus Bam Bam Bigelow. Now, incidentally, cage match ratings are not available for this because of the length of matches or the lack of votes, but Bret Hart versus Bam Bam Bigelow was voted 7.5. on Cage Match, so that could be one to check out. And I believe it would be part of the European Matches special that's on the WWE Network currently. So that would definitely be one that's worth checking out. But for Money Inc. versus the Steiner Brothers, it's a 5 out of 10.
The Rain Room.
Okay, let's fast forward now to 1997 and an episode of Monday Night Raw from Berlin, Germany. Now, from the setup of this, it looks like this was not necessarily going to be a televised event because it just looks like a live event that happens to be on television. You've not got the right level of lighting, the stage is not there, so it's quite dingy, quite dull, but it's a packed arena, and they're ready for action, and this was aired as a two-hour episode of Monday Night Raw. Now, in the lead-up to this, this was part of a wider tour of Germany where there were 9 shows in a row. This one, I think, was about the 6th or 7th. But in the preceding shows, there was a tournament to crown a new European champion. And there was one match on each night, the kind of the quarterfinals and the semifinals. And this episode of Monday Night Raw had the final, in which the British Bulldog defeated his brother-in-law, Owen Hart, to become the first ever European champion. Now, a few of the matches on the card for Raw was Bret Hart against Triple H, Rocky Maivia defending his Intercontinental title against Vader, the Sultan fought Flash Funk. But the match we're going to be talking about today it was kind of middle of the card. It was for the WWE Championship as the champion Psycho Sid took on Mankind. Now, before the match starts, we see Mankind in the back, and he's doing an interview, and he's doing it in fluent German. So that's very interesting, because if you didn't know the man or the character, you would find it very surprising that he can speak such good German. But obviously a smart move if you're in front of a German crowd. Now, as the match starts, it's a quick start by Sid. He actually attacks before the bell, hits a clothesline. But on the outside, Mankind fights back. But Sid moves, Mankind goes flying into the post. Early on in the match, the commentators are hyping up next week's Monday Night Raw, and they're saying it's going to feature Sid and The Undertaker teaming up in a tag team match. Now, the fact that The Undertaker would be fighting the champion at that year's WrestleMania, which I think is about 3 or 4 weeks after this show, kind of telegraphs the result, because obviously they're building towards a Sid versus Undertaker match by having the tag match in place, but Sid is currently in the ring defending the championship, so it's almost taken away the jeopardy that we might get a new champion at this point. Now, as the match continues, we get a picture-in-picture, I want to say, or a side-by-side split screen. I don't know what the technical term is, but, you know, two screens, one of the match and one of WWF Studios back in the US, where Stone Cold Steve Austin is being interviewed about his upcoming match with Bret the Hitman Hart. So again, the importance of this WWF title match seems to be somewhat diminished, and it seems to be just background noise to what's happening with other stories. But back to the match itself, Mankind in control, hits a leg drop, hits an elbow on the outside before we go to commercial break. But from the other side of the break, Sid's back in control. They're out fighting on the floor. Sid hits a suplex on the floor. Get back in the ring, and the action is not really great at this point, and the crowd is fairly quiet. But then, seemingly out of nowhere, Mankind fights back with the mandible claw. Sid's fading, but it's only a two count, and Sid gets his shoulder up. And then he gets out of the move, which really doesn't happen very often, that you get out of Mankind's finishing move. You know, the idea behind the mandible claw is that it's a debilitating move that kind of paralyzes the opponent. So for Sid to fight out is a really way of showing how strong he is. Mankind hits the double arm DDT, gets a sleeper hold, and Sid appears to be passing out. But again, out he comes, firing back. Paul Bearer, Mankind's manager, gets up on the apron to interfere, but it backfires. Mankind goes flying into Paul Bearer, knocking him down. Sid with a chokeslam, a powerbomb, and the 1-2-3, and he's still the champion, much to no one's surprise, it has to be said. Now again, the distractions of things like Steve Austin's interview, the fact that they were talking about next week's show and kind of telegraphing the result, and the action itself wasn't really great, means that I've given this a 4 out of 10. Just a filler TV match, really. Now, the show itself, I would definitely recommend, particularly the main event, which was for the European title. A very, very good, a very, very good match indeed. And this time period overall is one of my favourites in wrestling history, because it's just starting to be kind of the birth of the Attitude Era. Things are getting a little bit more crazy, a little bit more violent, a little bit more risque, and it's kind of you can see undertones of that throughout this show and others in the preceding and superseding weeks. But for this match itself, doesn't really stand out much, and it's a 4 out of 10 for me. The Rain Room. Now, this next European match takes place in London, England, at the Insurrection pay-per-view. Now, this was one of a series of UK-exclusive pay-per-views that were made in conjunction with Sky Box Office. They actually stopped doing that the following year, so after this one, there was only a couple more, I think. Interesting note about this show, it's the very last ever WWF show. From the following Monday onwards, from the Monday Night Raw, they quietly changed their name to WWE, and that's because of an ongoing lawsuit with the World Wildlife Fund. Now, I don't know all the details of said lawsuit, but I will try and surmise some of the key bits, but definitely worth looking into it a bit more detail, because it's somewhat fascinating and strange, I find. So back in 1994, Titan Sports, who were the owners of the World Wrestling Federation, they'd entered into an agreement with the World Wide Fund for Nature, because they'd also got WWF trademarked. Now, to avoid any confusion between the two companies, Titan Sports had agreed to cease using the written acronym WWF and minimize spoken uses of WWF. And in return, the World Wildlife Fund agreed to drop any pending litigation and agreed not to challenge Titan's use of the full World Wrestling Federation name and the promotion's then logo. Fast forward 6 years to the year 2000, the World Wildlife Fund for Nature sued World Wrestling Federation Entertainment Incorporated, which was the new name for Titan Sports, for violations of this 94 agreement, particularly in regards to merchandising. This rumbled on until 2002, when this pay-per-view, the Insurrection pay-per-view, was the very last time that the WWF name was used. And then from the following day, the company launched its Get the F Out marketing campaign, changed all references from WWF to WWE, changed its website URL to WWE.com, and changed the official name of the company from World Wrestling Federation Entertainment Incorporated to just World Wrestling Entertainment Incorporated. And then they publicized a press release during the broadcast of Raw on the Monday night, and WWE it has been ever since. Now, just to kind of follow up on this, apologies with it's talk matches, not legal matters, but I thought this was quite interesting. Following this, the WWF scratch logo, as they called it, became prohibited on all WWE properties. And when you go back and look at some archive footage from any time that was around, so kind of late 90s through early noughties, quite a lot of the shows have it censored. So even like the turnbuckles, you can see censorship. There's a helicopter flying overhead. I hope that's not anyone come to mess with me. You know, I'm just talking about, I'm not getting involved, I'm just talking about legal matters. But anyway, where was I? So they censored the logos, even on like the turnbuckles or the signage. So you see a lot of censorship and blurring on the screen. And also, if anyone ever says the letters WWF, they bleep out the F, which is really, really bizarre. That continued until 2012, when it was agreed that the Scratch logo no longer needed to be censored in archival footage, but it still remains out there, because they've not reverted it all back. But saying the words WWF are still not permitted on anything new. Like if you're airing original footage for the first time, or doing like packaging or advertising, if you do it new, you can't use the letters. So it's very, very bizarre. But that was just kind of a little side note about Insurrection 2002. Now, the match we're going to talk about is actually the main event of this show, and the matches preceding it included Rob Van Dam versus Eddie Guerrero, Trish Stratus and Jackie against Molly Holly and Jazz, X-Pac took on Bradshaw, Booker T and Steven Richards fought for the Hardcore title, the Hardy Boys took on Brock Lesnar and Shawn Stasiak, Spike Dudley won the European title from William Regal, interestingly, and Stone Cold Steve Austin fought the Big Show in a match refereed by Ric Flair. Following that was the main event, which was The Undertaker versus Triple H. Before the match starts, Undertaker rides out on his motorbike to the sounds of Rollin' by Limp Bizkit. Absolutely classic entrance theme. Fist fly to start. Triple H hits a high knee pretty soon, then a back drop and a clothesline over the top. They have a nice brawl on the outside. Taker into the post. Typical Attitude Era type stuff. And then back in the ring, Undertaker takes over with a clothesline. Goes for his patented old school. But before he can start walking the ropes, Triple H throws him from the top. Then he hits a suplex, an elbow. Clothesline on the floor, but then Taker back in control. Hits a couple of elbows to the back of Hunter's head. And even a leg drop on the apron, which is one of his patented moves. Triple H tries to mount a comeback, but Undertaker hits a chop block and then starts working on the knee with some elbows. Triple H fights back again, and then things start to really fall apart. Triple H goes for an Irish whip to the Undertaker, goes across the ring to the other side, and the top rope snaps. And you hear a really strange noise, and you see the rope sag, and it's a really dangerous move, because, I mean, if he'd have hit that any harder, he could have gone toppling over and landed on his head. It was pretty gnarly stuff. But then they continue the match, and you see the top rope for the rest of the match is just hanging there, loose. I mean, it's not like they can stop the match. They're on live pay-per-view, so they just continue best they can, but it does have an impact on the match quality from that point onwards. Triple H hits a back suplex. Then they both hit each other with a clothesline at the same time, and they're both down. Taker misses a boot in the corner. Triple H fights back with a couple of neck breakers on a spine buster. Tries for the pedigree, but Taker counters with a big boot. Goes for the chokeslam, but then Triple H counters that into a DDT. But eventually, Undertaker does hit the chokeslam for a long two count. He then hits a DDT, another two count, throat slash, it's all over. Goes. I thought he was going to go for the tombstone at this point, but actually went for some sort of submission hold, maybe like a dragon sleeper. But Hunter fights back with a clothesline, bit more back and forth. Taker hits the snake eyes in the corner, which looks really odd because, like I mentioned, the top rope is broken, so it doesn't have its usual kind of impact, I guess. It looks a bit odd, but Triple H fights back with another high knee, hits the pedigree for the 1-2-3. This was a good match. I enjoyed this a lot. I think that with the top rope breaking, it did kind of slow the momentum a little bit, but these are two pros in there. They carried on really, really well. And despite that mishap, I've still given this match 7 out of 10. Really, really worth going out of your way to see this one. And it's the first time I'd ever actually seen it. I had never watched it at the time, back in 2002. I didn't have Sky at the time, so yesterday, as we're recording this, at the end of April 2024, was the first time I've actually seen that match, so it's only taken me 22 years to get around to it. But a 7 out of 10, really, really good match. Now, before I finish and move on to something else, it's all, as well as the lawsuit, and there being the last WWF show that was ever made, another infamous tale from this weekend also emerged, and that is the notorious plane ride from hell. Now, I'm not going to go into all the details of what goes on here. I would suggest checking out the episode on season 3 of Dark Side of the Ring, which is on Vice. Excellent show, by the way, where they do a whole episode on the plane ride from hell. But it included various fights, including one with Brock Lesnar and Mr. Perfect, and they apparently nearly went through the door, which could have been a disaster in midair. There are allegations of sexual harassment of flight attendants, allegations of indecent exposure, amongst other things. So it's a pretty gnarly, uncomfortable scene. And like I said, really recommend you watch the episode of Dark Side of the Ring to give you the full account of what happened. But after a successful UK show such as Insurrection, this was a real black eye on the reputation of the company. What it led to was reprimands for Ric Flair and Gold Dust, Dustin Rhodes. But Scott Hall and Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect, were both fired as a result. So that gives you the level of severity. But yeah, that's kind of a side story. The main thing we want to talk about here is the match itself. Undertaker Triple H, 7 out of 10. Really, really good. That should be your lasting memory from this.
The Rain Room.
Now up next, I want to talk about an episode of Monday Night Raw from April 2007. And it was the first, and I believe only, episode of Monday Night Raw to emanate from Milan, Italy. Now, this was part of a European tour, which, if my research is correct, is quite astonishing because there was 22 shows in 9 days, which is quite the feat. Across this tour, they recorded over 12 hours of TV, including the aforementioned Monday Night Raw here in Milan, Italy. A lot of short matches on this card. There was only one match that went above 6 minutes, and that was the main event featuring John Cena against the team of Edge and Randy Orton, rated RKO. Everything else on the card was just short matches and interviews and such. Probably more famous from this tour would have been the following week when they did Raw from London, England, and there was an absolute epic between John Cena and Shawn Michaels, which went the best part of an hour, and it's called one of the best Monday Night Raw matches of all time. Maybe that'll be one we can talk about in a future episode, but what I want to talk about today is probably the most famous thing that happened on the show, and that was the Intercontinental Champion, Umaga, defending against a fan. Yes, defending against a fan. Not a real fan, of course. It was a plant. But it was quite a unique scenario. Briefly, what happened is Umaga's out after a interview promo segment with the coach and Vince McMahon. Now, this is in the fallout of WrestleMania 23, where Vince McMahon had his head shaved by Donald Trump after the Battle of the Billionaires match. We get a recap of what's been going on between Bobby Lashley, who was in who had Donald Trump in his corner at WrestleMania against Umaga. We get a recap of the feud between Lashley and the McMahons that's been going on. Vince's promo comes out insulting the Italians, and he says that Bobby Lashley is not in the arena tonight. And on behalf of Umaga, he issues an open challenge to the locker room. And there's no answer. Nobody comes out to answer this challenge. So he says, all right then, let's put the Intercontinental title on the line. And again, no one responds to the challenge. So he says, okay, let's try about the fans. There's a guy, it's just this random guy, gets in the ring. There's soccer chants, as the crowd call them, going on. The fan identifies himself as Santino Marella. And the crowd starts chanting for Santino. Vince makes it clear that he cannot be held responsible for anything that happens. So, the fan is on his own. A referee comes down and the bell rings. And Santino unbelievably shocks people with a few kicks and a roll-up for a two count. People were not expecting that. So Vince stops things. He says, oh, by the way, this is a no-holds-barred match. And that's when Umaga takes over. And his manager, Armando Alejandro Estrada, apologies, but that's kind of how he says it. He does it way better than I do. Gets involved. And here comes Bobby Lashley. He is in the arena after all. He throws Umaga off the top rope. Vince tries to get him with a chair, but Lashley takes it off him. Hits Umaga three times with the head with the chair. Hits him with the spear. Dumps Santino on top. And we have a new Intercontinental Champion. Just some guy who showed up as a fan. This was a fun and shocking moment. The match itself is really a bit of nothing. So if I was going to rate just the match in terms of match quality, I'd probably give it about a 3 out of 10. But as an angle, as a story, as a piece of television, it's really, really fun. And really furthers the story between Lashley and the McMahons. And establishes this new character, Santino Marella, who would go on to have quite the career in WWF once he established himself. He didn't stay as just the lucky fan. But he became one of the more memorable comedy characters. Won a few more titles as well in his time. So if I was judging this on the piece of television, the angle as it were, I'd probably give this a 7 out of 10. But pure match quality, not a lot really happens. So I'm not going beyond 3 out of 10. But a very fun piece of WWE television nonetheless.
The Rain Room.
One more European match that I want to go over today. And we're back in London. And this is NXT TakeOver London. Only the second TakeOver event to happen outside of Full Sail University. Now this happens in December of 2015. Little side note. There was a 7-night tour of the UK, of which this was night 7. I personally went to night 5, which was a live event in Nottingham. A really, really fun time. It wasn't full, it was maybe like half full, maybe 3,000-4,000 people in the arena. But the atmosphere was tremendous and the action was really, really great. So it was good to be a part of that. And then to see this live a couple of nights later on the network was a lot of fun. Now the event itself was pretty successful, it has to be said. Over 10,000 people in the crowd, which for an NXT show, bear in mind this is developmental, was pretty impressive. And for the purpose of this episode, we're going to be talking about the main event. But leading up to that, we had Asuka taking on Emma. We had the NXT Tag Team Champions, Dash and Dawson, who would later become the Mechanics, who would later become the Revival, and are now better known as Dax Harwood and Cash Wheeler FTR. Who you can see on AEW television. They took on the team of Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, or Big Cass, as he was also known, and retained the titles. Baron Corbin defeated Apollo Crews. NXT Women's Champion Bayley defeated Nia Jax. And then we got to the main event, which was the NXT Champion Finn Balor defending against Samoa Joe. Now we start with a nice video package highlighting the events leading up to this. They've been friends for over 10 years, and that friendship has been destroyed because Joe wants the gold. But, Finn said, you could have just asked, but it's too late for that now. This is a feud, and it's personal. Joe comes out first, and then the lights dim, and we hear a heartbeat sound as the music starts to play up. Finn has brought the demon to London. Now, the alter ego ego of Finn Bella the Demon is really a sight to behold. This is inspired by Jack the Ripper as he makes his entrance with the body paint and the outfit. And before the bell even rings, the crowd are chanting, "This is awesome." And it really is awesome at this stage. Really, really good. It's a big fight feel. They do the big introductions. There's dual chants. The crowd is on fire for this. We had a bit of a slow start, quite a cagey open. Bala with a kick, drop kick, and then a baseball slide to the outside. Joe replies with a uranage on the floor, and then back in the ring, gets some jabs in the corner. Huge chop, running elbow, and a kick. They're trading forearms. Joe cuts Finn off with the elbow. And then combo of chop, kick, and knee. Joe is really in control at this stage. Then he hits a few face wash kicks in the corner. Big boot, but misses the senton. Joe chops Finn to the floor, and then a huge flying forearm goes running through the ropes. Hits the flying forearm on the floor, rolls him back in, but only a two count. Then hits one of his trademark combinations, which is really cool to see for a man of this size. Hits the powerbomb. When that only goes a two count, he rolls that into a Boston Crab, and then to crank the pressure even more, he converts that into a crossface. Finn's trying to counter, but Joe cranks on his other arm. This is really, really good struggle going on. But Finn just about gets his big toe on the bottom rope, so it forces the break. Then fires back with a desperation DDT. Both men are down. Finn starts to fight back, hits a flying forearm, two running chops in the corner. Enziguri sends Joe to the floor, and then a beautiful swan, I guess, as it's called, a swan dive over the top rope to a big reaction. I guess, would it be called a tope suicida these days? I can't remember. He dives, he flips, it looks pretty cool. Proper wrestling nerds will know what that's called. I get confused because there's too many move names these days and I'm getting old. Back in the ring, Finn goes to the top, hits a double stomp to the back of Joe, but only a two count. Hits a spinning kick, a sling blade, but misses the drop kick in the corner. Joe fires back with a senton and goes for the muscle buster. Finn counters with a Pele kick, and they're both down again. We get some more back and forth before Joe finally gets in the coquina clutch. It's got to be all over now. But Finn manages to roll through, double stomp. The demon rises, hits the sling blade, three corner drop kicks, goes to the top for the coup de grace. Joe counters for a moment, but eventually Finn overpowers him, sends him to the mat, jumps off the top with the coup de grace double stomp for the three count. This was an excellent match. I think it was about 20 minutes or so. Really, really good. One of the better, I mean, NXT TakeOvers delivered every time, but this was one of the better main events for that time period. I absolutely loved it, and I've given this one 8 out of 10. That is a whistle-stop tour and just a handful of matches that have taken place in Europe over the years. I'm not trying to shill the pay-per-view this Saturday in Paris, France. I just thought the timing was quite nice. I'll be watching. Loads more European matches that we could talk about, particularly ones in the UK, but we'll probably get into those later in the year, particularly as Clash at the Castle in Scotland airs in June. So maybe in the lead-up to that, we'll talk about a few of the more memorable and maybe not so memorable matches from UK history. In the meantime, just as a bit of a programming note, Jay and I will be back together recording episodes of The Rating Room sooner rather than later. It's just a busy time for us both, so we're trying to keep the content rolling, but we'll be back together doing our thing before you know it. In terms of The Wrestling Room, I'm probably going to be talking about some King of the Ring classic matches over the next few weeks, because as WWF it's only been 22 years. As WWE goes to Saudi Arabia at the end of May for the King and Queen of the Ring tournament, I thought maybe we'll look back at some classic matches of the King of the Ring era. And like I said, some UK matches following that in preparation for Clash at the Castle. If there are any matches that you have seen and would like a review of, or any matches you've heard about and not seen you want to give my opinion on, and it doesn't have to be WWE either. You know, that's what I've done so far. It's probably the biggest library out there to access. But, you know, are there other promotions you're interested in? Matches that are maybe a little bit harder to find? As long as I can find them, I'll be sure to check them out. So feel free to send in your thoughts and ideas on all things wrestling for future episodes of The Wrestling Room. In the meantime, check out theratingroom.com. All kinds of information, episodes, show notes to be found there. Our social media, at The Rating Room, and our YouTube channel. Jay's done a fantastic job over the past few weeks and months creating a whole bunch of new content for the YouTube channel. We've got quizzes, we've got trivia, we've got little fun facts, we've got reviews, we've got music, we've got TV, all sorts of stuff going on there. Jay's been a very busy boy, and I think you'll really like what he's done over there at our YouTube channel specifically. But in the meantime, that's it from me. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you soon right here on The Wrestling Room.